Jen, and welcome to the latest episode of the Minorities in Publishing podcast. For those who are new or returning listeners, you may know that the podcast can be found on Twitter at Minorities in Pub or on Tumblr at minoritiesinpublishing.tumblr.com. And what I seem to forget to say every freaking episode is that I'm also on iTunes, so you can subscribe on iTunes. And that is on the Tumblr, but I should say this more often than I do. I am very happy to welcome the latest group of the We Need Diverse Books intern for this kind of magnanimous episode that we're doing with interns. And as I had told the previous group, there were others who were very excited when I told them. I said, oh, I'm going to be talking to the interns with We Need Diverse Books. And they're like, oh my gosh, I have so many questions. Or they asked me, they're like, can you just ask them what they think? I said, well, that's the intention of the podcast. But it seems like people are very eager to know what those starting in think of how well the industry is doing in terms of actually being more inclusive or all that stuff. So people are very eager to hear what you have to say. No pressure. Feel free to introduce yourselves.
Hi, I'm Maya. I'm an editorial intern.
And I'm Rafi. I'm a children's marketing intern at Simon & Schuster.
Yay! So the first question is always how. How did you get into publishing? And for y'all, it's more of how did you hear about publishing? At what point did this seem like a viable career choice for you? Was it when you were younger? Did you hear about it when you were middle grade readers? Or was it something you just heard about in college?
Okay, well, for me, it's actually a pretty funny story, or at least I think it's funny. So, in elementary school, in, I want to say, fourth or fifth grade, the way class was structured was we would have, like, our sustained silent reading time, and then we'd do math. And so I think the reason I don't know any math is because math class would start, and I would just keep reading. And one day, my teacher caught me, because she always caught me, and she was like, you like reading books so much that you should think about becoming a book editor, and you could do that all the time. And I was like, oh, okay. And I have wanted to be an editor ever since. So I was like 9 years old, like, I want to edit books for children and teenagers. Like, that's what I'm going to do when I grow up. Like, what a little jerk. That's my story. So I've always known that this is what I wanted to do. And you can imagine, like, 14-year-old me on the internet Googling, like, how do I make that happen? And I can't believe that now it's happening. But I'm really happy and glad.
As for me, my story is a little bit different. Publishing kind of found me, in a sense. Mm-hmm. And I've always been interested in reading and kind of investing myself, like, into the world of books. Mm-hmm. So I feel as though I have a very special connection with books because when I first moved to the United States, the way I learned English and the way I learned about my environment, the way I learned to adapt as quickly as I did, was through books. You know, I used books to figure out where I was, how to do things, and how to conduct myself in this new culture that I've traveled to. And because of that, my father has always said, you should definitely think about doing something book-related when you got older. But what did that mean to me at the age of 11? Nothing really. Mm-hmm. I think, luckily, when I came to Hamilton, I heard about the possibility of going into the publishing industry through one of my very good friends' parents. And I actually, you know, I kind of was like, it's one of those things that's like, when I heard about it, I was like, wow, this seems like the perfect, you know, like, career option. Like, maybe I should explore this more to see where this takes me, to see what I can learn, to see what I can, you know, figure out about myself, because I'm still very unsure about, or I was still very unsure about what I wanted to do with myself career-wise. I started off at Simon & Schuster saying, this is a good opportunity, I'm going to learn a lot from it. But at this point on, having like less than a week left, I'm positive that this is definitely something I want to go into.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, publishing kind of found me, but I'm glad it did.
Mm. So speaking to your respective divisions, Maya, do you find that that teacher was a liar? Just saying, you're an editorial, you get to read all day. Because I learned that very early on when I was an editorial assistant. I said, you don't get to read all day. my life is invoices.
I wouldn't consider that teacher a liar so much as ill-informed. I think what might have been more accurate would be to say you get to talk about and think about books all day and then read them all evening when otherwise you might be doing something else.
And Rafi, in terms of being in marketing, was that kind of a choice for you, or was that where you kind of ended up to?
So I, again, going back to marketing found me. Going back to publishing found me, I didn't really know anything about the publishing industry to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
I talked to the HR at Simon & Schuster, and I was like, I really want to have an internship here to figure out what I want to do with myself and to see if this is something I'm potentially passionate about.
Mm-hmm.
And she just asked me, do you want to be in children's or adults? And I just knew that I was so interested in children's books. And so all I told her was that I wanted to work with children's books, but I didn't necessarily want to work in editorial, because when you hear about publishing, what people often think about is editorial.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I felt that that wasn't for me really, but I wanted to explore other things. And so I was placed in marketing, but I felt like, again, it was the perfect match for me. You know, I love working for the marketing department.
Mm.
Yeah.
So what are you finding respectively in terms of the positions that you're doing to be the biggest upside?
I am surrounded by other people that can't do math but love books.
Even
be fair,
in this room, you're potentially surrounded by
people. Yeah.
Who are math.
Yeah.
And love books.
It could be that they can do math, but I have not seen evidence of that. But I've seen a lot of evidence of them loving books. And it is so much fun to be around people where I can be like, did you ever read Once Upon a Marigold? Which is just like a book that I loved as a child that, as far as I know, like, it's not like Harry Potter, you know, not everyone has read it, but like, in any given room, people will be like, yes, I loved that book.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just so nice to be able to have those connections with other people that get it. Because I remember growing up, people were, like, pretty nice to me. I wouldn't say, though, that I had a lot of, like, real friends as a kid. Because all I wanted to do was, like, read and play chess and run really fast.
I can relate.
I can relate. The end of it. Right? But, like, now, like, we have each other, and we both love books.
Yeah.
And we share that experience.
Yeah.
And it's, like, it's okay that we didn't have a million friends before. We have a million friends.
Yeah. I would say it's definitely the same for me. Being in a place where I'm surrounded by people who love books, who talk about books, who are just so passionate about
mm-hmm.
how they interact with books, and like, you know, just like being with people who have the same interests in me is definitely a plus. But I will say, too, that being specifically in the marketing department, what I've found to be my favorite part is the creative aspect of the marketing department. So I've realized that the publishing industry is a lot more complex than I thought. You know, like, even I think when I was, like, 15, if you had asked me, what do you think about publishing, or, like, when you think about publishing, what comes to mind, I would have said editorial. Or like, you know, editing books and like working with authors, but that's not the only thing. The marketing department, or working with the marketing department, what I've realized is that we work so hard on finding new creative ways to promote the book and the work itself, and I find that really joyful. You know, I feel like I want to work hard to promote books that potentially could change lives of kids the way books have impacted me, you know, and that's why I love working in the department that I do.
I think that's one of the reasons that I really love children's publishing in particular. I feel like publishing for adults, it's just like you want the books to find readers and that's kind of it.
Mm-hmm.
But publishing for children, you're like, I want this book to teach empathy. Like, I want this book to teach a kid strength.
Yeah.
I want this book to change a life.
Yeah.
And they do that.
Yeah.
That happens.
Yeah. Yeah.
Joyful is the right word. I like that you said that.
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely. You know, I even though my commute is about like an hour and a half, I'm so happy going to work every single day because I get to work with so many beautiful, like, cute, like, happy books that send out good messages, you know? And my job is to help make those books popular so they reach a lot of people, you know? And I enjoy doing that.
I have to attest to the fact that both of the guests have really large smiles on their faces. And I'm sitting here, wah, wah, 13, 14 years in the business.
Every morning, the person who works next to me, she says, good morning, and I'm like, good morning, and she's like, you're always really happy in the morning, and I'm like, I love my job.
I love books. Yeah.
Well, speaking to that then, do you feel like you've, and we kind of spoke about this with the other group and even before we started recording, do you feel like the time frame has been enough to actually get a hold of what your position in these key divisions would be and what it means to be in this area of publishing? Like, is 2.5 months like, all right, I much got it down? Or is it like, you know, 4 months would be great, if possible. 6, and, you know, they have the rotation system, rotation assistant programs in certain areas. So those are usually 9 months, 10 months, maybe even a year. And those serve to try and get people to get a taste of it. So do you feel like this is a taste, or this is really, yes, finite decision?
It is a taste. It is not, like,
the entire meal.
Yeah. I just today, I have learned things that I could have been doing all along that I didn't even know, like, I had that option of doing. Mm. And so it's definitely, the length of the internship is not a long time. It's not enough to learn all the ins and outs of whatever aspect of the industry that you're in, but I do think that it's long enough to give you the perspective to know if it's right for you or not.
Mm.
So for me, this internship, you know, we're rolling up on the end of it for sure, and there's a lot that I still want to learn and want to know, but also I'm more sure than ever that it's right for me.
I would definitely say the same thing. You know, I felt like just recently when I realized that this is something I actually want to do when I get older, you know, it's over.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's definitely, like, thinking about it, like, I don't think that, like, half the things that I, like, learned covers the entire department at all.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've only specifically worked with one person, my manager, and towards the end is when, the other people in my department started getting comfortable enough or started to know me well enough to actually be comfortable with giving me work that they think I can do. And we're going on to our last, like, week. We're down to our last week. And here I am, like, getting more and more work and learning so much more and, like, being happy that I'm learning. But at the same time, realizing that I only have 3 more days left. So, yeah, 2 months or 2.5 months is definitely not enough. However, it was enough for me to realize that this is what I want to do.
I am super, super hashtag blessed that I'm transitioning from being an editorial intern to being an editorial assistant.
Woo, woo, woo.
What?
Woo.
Thank you. Very happy.
No.
I'm very, very happy.
Yeah.
But one of the things that my new boss told me was that she used to think if you couldn't learn a job in 3 months, then, like, you weren't competent or something.
Oh,
and she's
yeah,
like,
that's
no, if, like, in this industry, if, like, go a year and maybe you'll start feeling like you have a handle on it.
Oh, yeah.
Like, wait an entire year
mm-hmm.
and maybe you'll, like, get into the swing of things.
Yeah.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I feel like in just the summer, there's no way that you could possibly,
mm-hmm.
like, learn everything about your department.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, if you're in college, it really, really would privilege the people that go to schools in New York if internships were, like, year-long things.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, nobody else would be able to do
yep.
this. So I'm glad that they have these shorter-term internships,
mm-hmm.
at least.
So are both of you local or no?
No, I am from Kentucky, where there are no opportunities.
Except for maybe Kentucky University Press, but not necessarily Children's.
Yeah, not the same. We got a lot of stuff over there. We got, like, hills and trees, and those are nice, but, you know, they aren't publishing companies. But I'm local now.
Yeah.
Now that I'm staying.
Woo!
Yeah.
Woo!
Thank you.
I am not local. I'm from Connecticut. I do go to school in upstate New York, but that's about 5 hours away from New York City, and so I don't really, like, you don't even feel like you're in New York when you're in upstate New York,
yeah,
because it's just
totally
different.
Different.
Yeah.
Totally.
So this is actually my first time, like, living in the city, like, by myself, taking responsibility for myself, and, like, working at the same time. It's definitely new. It's different.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it gives me a taste of what, like, I will be doing when I start my career.
Oh, I love
so.
That confidence. So good. Because you will be doing it.
Yeah.
You're not
going
far,
to
far.
Yeah.
You know?
I'm actually kind of far. I'm a rising junior.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, you can keep doing internships.
Yeah, that's what I'm planning on doing. That's what I'm planning on doing. But, yeah, when I tell everyone else who has the internship at Simon & Schuster is, like, a rising senior or, like, in grad school, and I'm like, hi. Rising junior, going abroad next year. Yeah.
Well, that would be even more great experience going abroad.
Yeah, yeah. I'm going to try to actually get, like, an internship or a job that has to do with book publishing there.
Ooh.
We'll see how it goes. I want to see how it, like, differs from, like, international publishing to, like, the States.
Oh, snap.
Yeah.
You're going to learn so much.
We'll
yeah.
see.
Put that on the record. I was like, hire her. She was in Zimbabwe.
Working in
the
book publishing industry. Yeah.
Well, considering that too, with the summer internships, because they do, when I was in college, I did a summer internship at Scholastic, and I did a winter to spring internship. So from January to May, I had an internship at the now defunct Bookspan, and I had to make sure to form my schedule around the internship and vice versa. But the thing was, the Scholastic one paid, the other one didn't, but I was able to get a stipend through my program. So I was able to get something, a chunk of money to kind of help offset. And then it's kind of what irritates me about unpaid internships, but also internships that are unpaid and then for college credit, is that you're paying for your internship. And that really bugs me, is that, like, oh, you get college credit. Do you not realize I'm paying for college credit? So I'm paying to work.
Yeah.
This is ridiculous.
Yeah.
That said, would you have been able to do this internship if there was not a stipend?
No.
Absolutely not.
No way.
Yeah.
Nope.
Yeah.
Nope.
I think that it was important for me, or to me, I definitely wanted to go into an internship that taught me a lot, that, you
mm-hmm.
know, gave me a lot of new experiences, but at the same time, I wanted to come out of the summer with something saved,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Mm-hmm.
I went into it thinking, I'm fine if I everything kind of balances out.
Mm-hmm.
But I definitely did not want to go into it thinking I'm going to have to pay like $2,000 to get this internship, to live in the city, to
mm-hmm.
med, like to get food in order to work. You know, that would have just been ridiculous. And I don't think I would have gone through that trouble.
No.
Yeah.
I'm really lucky in that my internship is paid, and I recognize that that is rare and that I'm really, really lucky to have that. But even with it being paid, there is no way that I would have been able to afford moving to New York, living here, getting settled. Because there are so many costs that when you're in college, you've never had to think about before.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, security deposits,
yeah.
you know? You don't necessarily think
mm-hmm.
to include that
mm-hmm.
when you're trying to tally up the cost of moving. But, man, that's a lot of money. Always. So, no. I wouldn't be able to do it without the We Need Diverse Books grant. I am so thankful.
Yeah,
hashtag thankful.
Hashtag
yeah.
Well, that's it. So did the internship being the publishers respectively help you with housing or give you kind of information, especially coming to New York that you're not native?
Yeah.
You know, I'm a native New Yorker, so for me it was like, yeah, sure, whatever. I don't have to worry about rent.
Yeah.
Worried about, I don't have to worry about any of that. I just need to get there and get back.
Yeah.
And so when you're interviewing for these internships and you're out of state, do they kind of help you in terms of, okay, these are some suggestions we have for housing or places to look for housing, or, hey, here are the other interns, maybe you all want to buddy up and live together? Or?
No, but I was told up front that they would not be helping me. So it's not like I was expecting some kind of guidance and then it didn't come.
Mm-hmm.
I was told from the very beginning, like, hey, I see that you're out of state. Are you going to be able to handle all those things? Because we don't do any of that for you.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, just give me this job and I will figure the rest of it out. I will do whatever it takes. And they were like, okay.
Yeah. Same as you. I didn't really receive any help. You know, I kind of had to, like, figure everything out from, like, taking the subway to where to get food, like, where to live. But I do think that, like, because I did not reach out, really, to ask, like, where do you think I should stay or, like,
mm-hmm.
what have past interns done? I think had I done that, you know, I don't know what would have happened. So I can't say for certain that, like,
mm-hmm.
My company or Simon & Schuster doesn't really help. However, like, they also did not reach out to me and say, you know, if you're looking for places to stay, this is the best place, or, like, we can help with this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, none of that, just the minimum wage, and are you able to get there and come in and work and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I said yes, and so everything, you know, I was just like, I'll figure it out when I get here.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of what I did.
Wow, it's really being thrown into the fire.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
Moving to New York is big.
Yeah.
I mean, moving from another state is, but New York is
yeah.
fast and furious, especially if you're not used to it being fast and furious.
Yeah.
So I wonder if that can be something that they offer. Maybe they collate information every year and say, okay, this is what these interns did.
Mm-hmm.
So then they have a packet and say, this is what the previous interns did in terms of housing, you know, what to watch out for.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I definitely think that would have been really helpful.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And also...
No, go ahead.
And also just, like, the cost of everything in New York City is outrageous. Oh, my God.
That's insane.
And even my Chipotle is more expensive. That makes no sense.
Yeah. You know? And so all this stuff you're not really prepared for, you come in, you know, getting paid so little.
So
being
little.
Being told to, like... You know,
enjoy
find where to live.
City.
Yeah. You know, I think that one thing that I've definitely learned is that the publishing industry itself, it's a passion-driven career. Like,
yeah.
you have
mm-hmm.
to be passionate. If you're not, you're not going to be happy. Like,
yeah.
because with how much you're getting paid and, like, stuff like that, from an intern's perspective,
yeah.
it's not, you know.
I will say, though, that everybody is very aware of how little we get paid, and so every time that I would do something with people from work, I'd, like, get my wallet out, and they'd be like, oh, no, 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 put that away. I'm buying for you. You make no money. I'd be like, thank you so much. You're right. I make no money.
You constantly wear like a gold chain that says intern.
No money.
You know I'm an intern. You should pay for this.
Yeah.
This is a $6 orange juice.
I know.
Why
right?
is this happening?
Why is this happening?
Oh, it's also horrendous depending on where you work. Because yeah. I think my previous publisher was in Tribeca, and Tribeca is a walk away from Chinatown. Chinatown's super cheap eats, right? Mm-hmm. I used to also work in Midtown, not far from S&S. Mm-hmm. That totally changes things in terms
yeah.
of your options
oh,
and
yeah.
monetary demands.
Oh, yeah.
And it's just like,
still. Unless I get like soup, nothing, everything is about
$10. Right. Yeah,
right. That's fine though.
You
That's
get the
fine.
Half and half at Cozy. You get the half sandwich, half salad.
It's
$5. You're just like, I have double the
I asked my mom what she thought, like, a pretty good burger would cost. Like, a higher-end burger.
Yeah.
And she was like, maybe $6? And I laughed.
That's like a piece.
Until I cried.
A bite of sandwich.
Yeah.
At McDonald's. Get that.
But no fries with that. Like, that's just the burger at McDonald's.
No. I'm kind of bitter because across the street, the place is very nice and it's pretty, I don't know if it's upscale, but it's pretty nice. And I'm near, you know, we're near a private institution. And they have banh mi, which I love banh mi sandwiches because they're usually actually pretty cheap. In Chinatown, they're like $5 to $6. 13.
Ouch.
13.
Ouch.
Thanks, Upper West Side.
Yep.
Unfair.
Yeah.
Should be illegal.
Thanks.
Should be illegal.
Yeah. I'm going to draft some legislation.
Well, some bullet points we'd love for you to look at of why this is ridiculous and why you should buy the intern's lunch every day.
Every day.
Mm-hmm.
Every day. Putting that out into the universe to
yeah.
be fulfilled. So, it's so interesting you said minimum wage. Because if you take away the internship that I did for a semester, and that was $1,500 stipend, that's what I got for a semester. And I don't even want to break down what that cost was. But when I was at Scholastic, we earned 10 an hour, which was like, what? In 2003. It was like $10?
Double digits?
Lucky.
But it sounds like that's still what they're paying interns. If they pay you, it's still around the 10 an hour mark.
I think I get like 9.
What is minimum wage? I mean, I don't.
It's so funny. I thought, and I should have done this research, because we talked about this on the previous one, and everyone said 9, and I said, well, aren't we fighting for 15? I thought, because I think it's different in different states,
yeah.
for sure. So I thought we were at 15 in New York City,
yeah,
but I could be very, very wrong.
No.
I know that I'm not making 15, I'm making 12.
Wow.
I know, I'm a pretty high roller.
Right.
Now and then I
get a sandwich.
Yeah,
like
I get
$1
very occasionally.
Get a 5 napkin burger.
Yeah.
But never without guilt.
Oh my god. Yeah, no, I think I get paid like 9 an hour and it's okay, but definitely without the We Need More Diverse Flex grant, I would be in debt with the 9
wow.
an hour.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, especially if you're living here, you know,
yeah.
it's kind of like. Because some of the other interns were commuting
mm-hmm.
from Jersey, and they were telling me their cost was about $600 a month. So travel from Jersey, which is right there, you know.
That's like my subway.
Yeah.
Because, oh my god, and then there's that too.
Yeah, the $116 a month if
yeah.
you get the unlimited.
Yeah.
I do that. I get that ticket right out of my paycheck.
Yeah.
I don't
even want to see it.
I don't
it.
Even
want to take it out
yeah.
of my paycheck.
Yep, exactly.
I don't want to do that cha-ching. Just send it in the mail. Send it to me. Pre-tax. Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I used to work at a summer camp, and because they gave us, like, food and a place to stay, they could legally pay us less than minimum wage. And once you have worked for literally $1 an hour... It is so, you cannot spend money without guilt. You're like, I would have had to
yeah.
stay up in the middle of the night for like 10 hours for this one sandwich.
Yeah.
So I'm just like a little bit disgusted by how much everything costs.
Yeah.
Like $116. That's 116 hours.
Yeah. Pretty much.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
I remember back when it was 63 when they first introduced the Unlimited.
Back when you were 63?
No. When it was 63, the Unlimited.
Oh, really?
It was, when it first came out 13, 14 years ago, it was $63.
It's gone up twice.
Yeah, it's almost twice that,
almost
which
twice
is
that.
Insanity. But I will not dwell on this.
Yeah.
I will not be bitter.
For sure, I'm a straight up hater, but I want to say I love living in New York so much. I am so happy here. I love my job so much.
Yeah.
I love that there's great public transportation, even though it cost me all the monies. I'm super, super happy.
Yeah, I also definitely think that this has been an experience. It's helped me grow in a lot of ways. And I think that New York City in particular is a reason. You know, you kind of, you have to conduct yourself differently here.
Yeah.
So much more so than in other states. Even from being in Connecticut, I thought I was independent. Like, going to Hamilton, I thought I was independent. But coming to New York City, I learned. Yeah.
New Yorkers don't joke around.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's something we do not do.
Yeah.
Like I was telling you at the beginning of the episode, people were so, they're like, oh my god, ask them what they think, blah, blah, blah. And one of the biggest questions was, what can we do better? And I'm talking about the industry as kind of the, you know, the royal we say, right? What can we as an industry do better to make sure to get more marginalized representation? Because I feel like, I mean, with this internship, you had to get the internship. It wasn't as though We Need Diverse Books got you this internship.
Mm-hmm.
You got the internship. And then from there, applied for the grant, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Did you know about the grant before you applied?
No, I didn't.
That's so funny. Everyone has been saying that.
I did not.
I actually did.
Okay.
Because We Need Diverse Books has been on my radar for a bit now. But it's funny because once people found out that I was applying for the internship, I got so many emails like, you should apply for this grant! And I was like, I am, thank you! But a lot of people wanted to make sure I knew that this was an opportunity.
Yeah.
How did you find out?
I actually found out through Simon & Schuster.
When you applied?
I applied and I got the job, and I was like, I got the job, but I have no idea if I'm going to say yes or no. You know, I don't think I'll be able to afford living in the city and stuff. And the HR rep told me, apply for this, you know, you never know. And I was like, wow, this sounds so interesting. And that's kind of how I went about things. And luckily, thankfully, I got the grant, and here I am.
That's similar to what the other groups said. Like, Pia knew about it, but the other two hadn't known about it. Manny and Tara didn't know about it.
I have no idea.
But they said they saw it when they applied. And the link on the application said, and you may want to apply for this grant. So, in that regard, both you said you could not do this unless you had gotten this grant.
Absolutely.
So, A, it seems like money
would
be the most obvious answer to getting more marginalized representation. But you also had the foresight to apply for these jobs because you were interested in.
Well,
but
I think,
how do people do outreach for you?
I think that you need a certain amount of moxie to apply for a job that you know you probably can't take. Like, if
what do you
I
mean can't take?
If I hadn't known about this grant, but I knew that the internship was paid, I would still know that I probably couldn't take it because I wouldn't be able to afford it. And so, I think it takes like a certain amount of moxie to be like, I'm not going to be able to afford this job, but I'm going to apply for it anyway, and then try to figure it out, and then see if there's anything at all that I can do to make it happen. So just think of all the people that wouldn't apply, even though it's paid, because they know that they still couldn't afford it, because they don't know that the grant is an option.
Yeah. I mean, I felt like if I had applied, or when I had applied, I kind of told myself, listen, you're going to apply for this grant. If things don't work out, you're going to have to commute from Connecticut. And I was actually kind of like, I was ready to do that.
Would it have been that bad? I know some parts aren't too far, quote unquote.
It would have been terrible. It would have been like a 2.5 hour
commute
every way by train.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Yeah. So about 5 hours on the train a day just to work at Simon & Schuster.
Wow.
Yeah, if not more, because Simon & Schuster is like in Manhattan.
Yeah.
You know, so, yeah.
But it's like you were ready.
Yeah, I was ready to do that, and I don't have to, luckily. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I was ready to do that. So I think I would have applied, and ultimately, yeah, I would have done that.
Wow.
Yeah.
And that's a lot to ask of someone.
Yeah.
To commute 5 hours.
Yeah.
For minimum wage.
Yeah.
Not even 6 figures. You know,
yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
If it was like a lot of money, and then 1 or 2 days a week you work from home, it'd be like,
yeah,
it's kind of sweet.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I'll do it.
Under the current system, that's how much you have to want it. If you and your family don't have a lot of money, that's like the kind of thing you have to think to yourself.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And at the same time, that's also a hindrance. Because then you're not going to get, you're going to get a certain type of person who comes into publishing constantly.
And I think that hurts publishing overall. Because if we're all the same, I think it's good for people to be driven. But if we're all these like hyper driven, like super, super goal oriented people, then there are stories that have value that we might not see because they aren't like our kind of story and they don't appeal to us.
Mm-hmm.
But there will be a bunch of kids out there, for instance, because we work in children's publishing,
mm-hmm.
that aren't like us and that would love to see, I don't know, stories that don't appeal to us because of our personalities, but they wouldn't be getting made.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of representation... That's not what we normally talk about when we talk about representation in publishing, but
yeah.
There it is.
Sure. Yeah.
Well, it comes to socioeconomic diversity and then regional diversity.
Yeah.
Because I could say I was privileged that I live in the city where the hub of publishing is.
Yeah.
So I didn't have to worry about necessarily, you know, like I don't have to worry about traveling 5 hours. Like, I'm like, okay. All right. Well,
summer
I live
life.
In Queens.
Yeah.
I don't even live that deep in Queens. I'll be there.
Yeah.
It'll be fine. You know? And I mean, that really kind of makes it, okay, then we have New Yorkers or socioeconomically privileged.
Yeah.
And or, you know, people who look very similarly like Sex in the City, Gossip Girl type environment, who can get parents who can pay for stuff, even if they're not in the city, you know? So definitely, this is very interesting. This is very interesting.
Yeah.
To me. And I also want to ask, because you guys had the gumption to do so, and I was talking to another, not an intern, a fellow, because AAUP, American Association of University Presses, they have this grant, and it's over $500,000,
mm-hmm.
3 years, to put people in editorial, marginalized people who are in editorial. And there was a female and a male I met with. The male said, I apply for everything. I apply for all 4 fellowships, because it was at 4 university presses. I figured, whatever, I'll just try it. The woman said, I really took time to figure out which one was right for me, and that's the one I applied for. And I didn't feel like I could, apply for more than one. And I was like, oh, okay. So then we get to that kind of, like, dynamics. I don't know if it's gender specific, and I don't want to say it's gender specific, but that the dude was all like, I applied for all of them.
Yep.
Whatever. And
yep.
The woman was like, I just applied to the one, and I just kind of figured maybe I'll get it.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, why didn't you apply to... I just wanted to make sure. I wanted to see if it was a best fit. And
yeah.
Whatever. I don't know if it was a fit. And he got it, and I was kind of pissed. I was like,
yeah.
I was like, you applied for all 4, and she applied for one, and there were probably other people who applied for one.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay.
Yeah.
He exuded some privilege. Yeah. So I probably am a little biased. He was exuding a lot of privilege. And I was like,
I do think that men are socialized to just have this sort of, like, blind optimism, like, oh, it'll just work out. Like, it'll be fine.
Yeah.
And I think I consider myself someone that's, like, reasonably successful. I got, like, this grant. I got this internship that was hard to get. And in some ways, I'm, hang on, I'm settling in this chair. I'm going to get
It's a noisy chair.
Drop some knowledge. I think that in a lot of ways I share that blind optimism where I'm just like, it'll be fine. It'll be fine.
Moving to New York City.
Yeah, whatever. Something goes wrong, I'll figure it out. But I think that my blind optimism really comes from a different place. Like, for men, they're just taught like, oh, it just will work out. And for me, I'm taught like, I have to make it work out. So I'm like, I'm going to make it work out. It'll be fine. But for them, they're like, it just will be fine.
Yeah.
And like, are they wrong? Things work out for them.
He got the, he got a job. He applied for four. He got one.
Yeah. So.
Whatever, dude.
Yeah.
Who more than likely doesn't listen to this podcast? Yeah.
Good for you, but we hate you. You can cut that if you want. I don't regret saying it.
Oh my god.
But are there, do you think there are any other improved practices? Like, how do people? Because I feel like with most things, when it comes to the marginalized community, the onus is on us. The onus is on us to educate. The onus is on us to apply. The onus is on us to look. And I don't take away the fact that we should be aware, that I should be aware of how to find an agent, that I should be aware of how to apply for a job, that I should be aware of blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
But I feel it's a kind of reach across the table thing where you're both, like, arms extended.
Yeah.
So do you think there are other things that the industry, again, the royal we, can do, should do, to find more of the Mayas and Rockies of the world?
Yes. I think that when publishing companies are going to, like, job fairs at schools, because you know that it's happening, and nobody honestly expects to get a job from their school job fair. Like, that's not realistic. You go for the swag, you know? You got, like, a Rubik's Cube with a logo on it.
Yeah.
Like, you don't go for a job because you know that's not going to happen.
Yeah.
But when these companies are at those job fairs, I think they should be saying, like, we recognize that this is a problem in the industry. Like, we are actively seeking these kinds of applicants. Like, we'd love to take a look at your resume. Like, we'd love for you to apply for these jobs that we have. They should be promoting themselves as active and aware companies that want to be better and are working to be better.
Definitely. Definitely. I think doing that will, attract more diverse groups of people, you know. I will definitely say that because publishing found me, it's kind of hard, but I feel like people don't really think about, oh, I want to work in the publishing industry when I get older. You know, I feel like that's not a thing people think about, and even less so in, you know, the minority community.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and so how can you get this industry to be one of those that, like, you know, people talk about?
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have to, I don't know, it's a complicated question.
Yeah, because then it comes down to the love of books.
Yeah.
And if you, like, is that community, and I'm not trying to generalize communities, but, like, maybe just, like, is the area of Queens into books?
Yeah.
And if not, then,
yeah. And, you know, when it comes down to, like, loving books and being into books, I will definitely say that, like, there is a reason why growing up, books like A Thousand Splendid Suns were my favorite book, and that book honestly changed my life. It's because through the book, I was able to see myself in a way in the book, even though it's not directly, like, you know, the main character of A Thousand Splendid Suns isn't, like, a young, like, African-American female, like, no, but there was diversity there, and the problems that they face, I could relate to, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It goes down to, like, diverse books, you know, mm-hmm. appealing to different communities and, like, mm-hmm. minority groups. And from there, like, you can decide, like, or you can see, like, kind of, like, what happens, you know,
yeah,
how
yeah.
our, like, how, like, I guess the love of books will drive people to say, oh, I want to work in the publishing industry.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
Do you think if we increased the interest in literacy with communities, marginalized communities, that could help?
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
I think they definitely have to be books that represent those communities,
mm-hmm.
books that, like, resonate with them, and books that, like, you know, will change people,
mm-hmm.
will make them see things in a different manner.
Mm-hmm.
I just think that it's so hard to imagine yourself in the publishing industry when you're young, you're a person of color, let's say your family doesn't have a lot of money. And when you're imagining what success means for someone in that situation, you don't think book editor, you don't think marketer, you think, like, doctor, lawyer.
Yeah.
I think that, I don't know how this would happen, but somehow the word has to get out that, like, this is a viable career path. You can do the thing that you love. Like, if what you love is books, you can make that your life,
mm-hmm.
and you can be successful
mm-hmm.
and happy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because think of all the kids that, you know, are, like, total artist types and love books, but just have no idea, have never even thought, like, books come from somewhere.
Yeah.
Like, that's something I could do. Because it's like that story that Whoopi Goldberg tells about watching, I want to say it's Star Trek, and she sees a black woman on the show, and she, like, is running around her house like, you guys, there's a black woman on TV, and she's not a maid! And then she was like, I could do that too. How do we show kids, like, look at us, here we are, we're in this, and, like, we're doing it, and we're so happy, so they can be like, oh my god, I can do that too. You
yeah.
have to see it to know that you can do that.
Yeah. Yeah.
I can say that I'm at a point where I'm not starving.
Yeah.
So you do get there.
Yeah.
Nice.
Negotiate wisely.
Yeah.
You're getting your job.
Yeah.
I wasn't starving before, but living in New York is rough. And working in publishing is rough.
Yeah.
And then, as I was telling the other group, looking at other areas of publishing that were actually higher positions at other presses, actually they made less than what I do. I'm a production editor, and then I saw people at senior levels making less than me.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Okay.
Yeah.
How do you live?
Yeah.
Because like,
yeah.
you live in Brooklyn. What was that about?
Yeah.
So I do want to emphasize, you do get to a point where you are not starving, friends.
Yeah.
And you
smiley
benefit.
Faces.
All smiles now.
Yeah.
Well, I want to thank you so much, Rafi and Maya,
for
being on
thank
the podcast.
You. Of course. Thank you for having us.
Bestowing your knowledge. And I will reiterate that if you are new or returning listener to the podcast, you can find it on iTunes, Remembered, and Twitter, Minorities in Pub, and Tumblr, minoritiesinpublishing.tumblr.com. Thank you.